Thank you very much, Lukasz. We have already 5 questions here. One is for all speakers, so let me start with this one. Maybe if you are, Lukasz, still on, I will ask you to start to answer. There's someone asking, multiple mainstream media in, for example, in Italy, have cooperation agreements with Chinese propaganda organs. Have you encountered similar moves into mass cooptation of traditional local media in your countries? So, Lukasz, Filip, Justyna, if you are on, can I ask you for answer, please?
As I was asked to start. Yes, of course we have. There is the most famous case that is reported by other researchers is about the Rzeczpospolita. This is the daily newspaper devoted to economic that regularly publishes the articles by a Chinese embassy that contradict the opinions and comments expressed by the US embassy, for example. There are also, but recently we also can observe that more mainstream media, for example, the Onet.pl, that is one of the most important internet news portal, also has been used by the Chinese side to spread the CPC propaganda. So it's not new in Poland. Everyday life. Thank you.
Thank you, Lukasz. Justyna, can I ask you to answer, please?
Yes. Lithuania is also experiencing some sort of Chinese influence in media sphere. And one radio station has investments from the Chinese person, for example. Radio station is called Lietus, or The Rain in English. It is pop music radio station and news thing. Also, the Chinese themselves, we have Xinhua branch in Vilnius, in our capital city, and we very actively cover the topics from Lithuania in Xinhua website. And also, when you read articles in main media portals, you can also see the articles which are bought by the Chinese ambassador, for example. He was promoting future mankind concept in our media quite actively. And of course, you see the numbers that the article is political advertisement or something like that, but you see the intensity growing of such articles in media. And interesting case was with our daily Lietuvos Rytas, the Lithuanian morning newspaper. They lost the case with Huawei. Huawei went to court they lost case. They wrote some inaccurate information about Huawei and they lost the case. But still, they advertise or they publish articles from the Chinese ambassador. So I don't know, it's interesting. But business is business in this case. So that's my answer.
Thank you very much. I think Filip would like to add something about the Czech situation, if I may ask.
Right. Well, there's several, let's say, channels that that I can mention. For example, the most obvious is that the Chinese state company CITIC actually owns a large media house that owns several papers, regulars, I think weeklies, and also a TV channel. Then they have very, I would say, intensive cooperation with one specific paper called Literarne Noviny, where they often publish content either directly from Chinese propaganda outlets, or they often host, for example, local Czech academics who are sort of friends of China who publish there as well. It's not as red as it used to be, but it used to have good reputation and was actually quite red, but basically due to financial situation they sort of got into Chinese hands more or less. Then there's we haven't really looked into that much, but we know it exists, that there's certain sort of content sharing at the sort of more regional, local radio and TV channel level. I would say the other sort of issue I could put into this category would be the fact that local media outlets that are owned by people who are close to China because of all kinds of, for example, business interests, are also playing this role. And even though that there you don't really have a, I would say, like Chinese content there specifically, even though sometimes that also, for example, like in interviewing somebody on this site, you have very clear tendency on the side of these media outlets to basically keep a more pro-Chinese or at least less critical tone in their news. But for example, when it comes to actually embassy writing anywhere or the ambassador giving interviews to local Czech media, they usually just go for this, I would say, sort of disinfo fringe. I mean, it's not necessarily fringe in the terms that it would not be read. They actually have quite a large audience, but it's sort of alt-right disinfo, whatever you want to call it, website called Parlament Listy, and that's where the embassy usually publishes.
Thank you very much, Filip. Now we have two questions. One is for Lukáš and one for Justina. So, and one for Filip as well. So three questions. I will start with the one for Lukáš. Is it possible that some propaganda books that could endorse, for example, repressive policies in Xinjiang violate Polish laws on the promotion of totalitarianism or human rights abuses?
Actually, yes. The Polish law forbids the propagating the violence and the oppression against the ethnic minorities. So, if any publication blatantly, openly praises the torture, the persecution, and the ethnic cleansings, yes, this publication and the publisher could be punished. But the point is that the Chinese propaganda is much, much more subtle. So it's not the direct that they praise the torture, but it's about the problem solving. It's about the counter-terrorism. So it is adopting the narrative that is very hard to be prosecuted under the Polish law. Have I answered the question?
Yes, thank you. I have one question, actually two questions for Filip, so let me start with Filip and then Justina. Filip, there are two questions from audience. One is asking about the Václav Klaus, the former Czech president, if he had any contacts with CCP link groups. I think we missed that part of your presentation. And the second question is, are there any prominent United Front figures not linked to Zhejiang or Fujian?
Right, so maybe I'll actually show you the slides you sadly missed. So Václav Klaus is the former president of the Czech Republic, also previously prime minister. And here you can see him in 2010 at his favorite Chinese restaurant in Prague District 8 with Milan Sun, who is a former head of the Qingtian Hometown Association and currently is the chair of one of the mixed membership groups called Czech China Center, and is very active in sort of trying to attract Chinese entities to interact with Czech partners. And Václav Klaus is actually a kind of interesting person when it comes to his Chinese ties, because they are not necessarily too prominent, but we know he's been sort of friend of China, fascinated by the country since at least late 90s. And allegedly, he's been a friend of the owner of this restaurant, Zhou Lingqian, I may have actually talked about before here, who is the current chair of the Hometown Association. And actually, there's this sort of funny story about how supposedly Joe actually prayed to the Buddha Maitreya before Klaus got elected for the first time. So technically, you could call that a Buddhist deity mingling and meddling in Czech elections, because, well, I mean, he actually succeeded. So he's been sort of interacting with local diaspora. Interestingly, also, he, for example, actually quite recently went on sort of a propaganda trip to China, where, among other things, he supported or sort of legitimized the Chinese politicized narrative regarding the Nanjing massacre. So yeah, he's definitely been interacting with these entities, but he's definitely not viewed as pro-Chinese as Eman is, but he's still within the same circles, interacting with the same people. And actually even today, he still now and then sort of makes comments that are sort of favorable to China. The other question was if there are any people within the Chinese diaspora who are not from Zhejiang or Fujian. There's actually several other groups that I could mention. There's people from Guangdong who have become quite active recently. There are also groups that are mixed from the sort of northern part of China. But the one person that's very interesting in his activities is Wang Wanming, who is originally from Tianjin. And what's interesting about him is that, A, he actually was sent to the Czech Republic by the Communist Youth League's travel agency to be their representative in the Czech Republic back in the 90s. And he slowly became a businessman and also started participating in local diaspora organizations. For example, he was the chair of the Czech Chinese Business Association that's sort of uniting business people and United Frontlings from all the local diaspora factions. He actually served as the president, I think, for like 5 or 6 years, quite a long time. And now he's running a New Silk Road Chamber of Commerce, an entity where he also has Mr. Jan Tvrdoň, who actually is a very interesting person linked to several disinfo websites, and also to the Czech Social Democratic Party. And you can actually see Wang here in a sort of unusual role for him, basically doing corona propaganda on behalf of the Hunan People's Government. And also the local United Front organs, because he's actually an advisor to both these entities. Not only that, he also has positions, for example, with a Shanghai District United Front organ. And so basically you have a person who is sort of employed by organs and entities across whole China, which is sort of unusual for the diaspora, at least for the cases that we have here, where usually the diaspora members usually mainly interact with the province organs that from the province they are from. But he seems to be sort of all over the board, and he does not really do as much exchange with local politicians, even though you can actually see him doing that, because this is actually in Pilsen, with the local, I think, deputy mayor. And but he mainly seems to be engaged in academic exchange, where he often brings delegations of Czech scholars and innovative business leaders to China to sort of visit not only companies, universities, but also at times he brings them to visit United Front organs, which on his own is rather strange. That's basically the case of Wang Ming, who seems to be very active, and I'm sure that we will hear more about him soon.
Thank you very much, Philip. And now we have one question for Justina. It seems that the Lithuanian right-wing opposition, often very critical towards the PRC or showing support for Taiwan, just won the election. How will that shape Lithuania's China policy?
Yeah, thank you for the question. It's very good and timely question. However, the elections is still not complete. There was just first round, and we are going to have a second round on 25th of September. October. Well, yeah, the biggest the promoters of Lithuania-Taiwan relations are more from right-wing parties, like conservatives and liberals. I know personally these members of parliament, or soon-to-be former members of parliament. I may expect maybe not radical changes in Lithuania's China policy, but obviously, there are going to be more debate about that. The debate is going to be more intense possibly more, like we will see maybe more initiatives also from Taiwanese side, since we see that there are more and more supporters in Lithuania. We get more support in Lithuania for their policies. So both sides are becoming more active, not just Lithuanians, but also the Taiwanese. So that would be I don't see, like, let's say, radical change in our position, like governmental position on China's policy, but or let's say one China's policy. But the debate is becoming more intense and going to be intense in the future.
So there is a question for Lukas. Your Polish publishing company is a good example of the need for enforcing reciprocity between China and European countries. Do you think this can be raised to the European level with, for example, automakers?
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is very important to understand that this is the case. So let's not look at other cases from this angle. As I said, Mr. Marszałek is a businessman. So he believes that selling books is like selling other things, and the business is good. So there are several dimensions. If we talk about the European Union, there is not a very strong debate about demand for China to open the market for the European books, to free the market, because it's against the basic rule of the CPC's governance, so about the free speech. And on the European Union level, I think that it should be more pressure on China to open up the market and to loosen up the restrictions on the freedom of speech. So this is the European Union dimension. But on the local national dimension, I think that we have other tools. And the one is to being more transparent. So if any company receives, if any entity receives the subsidies from the Chinese company, it should be reported in the financial statements. Because now the simplified accountancy that does not require those subsidies to be reported. So transparency on the local level. And this is not only about legal framework, this is about us, this is about scholars, about academics. If we do not put a pressure on the publishing houses which are involved in publishing Chinese propaganda, then they will feel free. And what is dangerous is for the scholars, those kind of books are not that dangerous, because they understand Chinese government, they understand CPC's policies. But journalists, students, the people who are students, not necessarily sinology students, they not necessarily understand, and they not necessarily are able to recognize what is the propaganda, what are the facts, what is the truth, and what is the propaganda. So this is the task for the academic community, to name propaganda outlets, to name the specific books, and to criticize. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I'm sorry for the mistake that I read before. There's one more question to Philip, or for Philip. Philip, there's someone asking from audience, was there coordination from China China for the purchase of masks, or was it done on the initiative of the United Front groups in Europe?
I mean, as for the purchase, I mean, if we're talking about the sort of mobilization to purchase masks and then back to China in January and February, it was done at least officially when we talk about the anti-front groups. It was done on sort of answering the call of the All China Federation of Returned Overseas Chinese. So you could say that it was actually mobilization by the Anti-Front War Department, even though that we know that some of the donations had already been made sort of spontaneously by the community before the United Front organs actually acted. On the other hand, what sort of was definitely coordinated and came from the top, let's say, was, for example, the organized help for Italian Tianese and other Chinese living there back in March when the situation was really bad there. The Qingtian and even lower level United Front organs actually asked the European Qingtianese community to donate food supplies and protective gear to Italy. I mean, specifically to the Chinese living there, not to Italians. So that definitely was coordinated. There even was a WeChat group that was actually probably administered by somebody from the United Front War Department that actually gathered together Qingtianese leaders from across Europe to help organize sending of the help to their Italian brethren. Basically, most of the donations, for example, to local Czech entities or local diaspora, have at least in name, again, been organized or done on behalf of some United Front organs. We even had, I already mentioned the case of Hunan government and the local CPPCC. For example, even Zhejiang province, United Front War Department actually asked, or the Department of Zhejiang province asked the Xinjiang Hometown Association to donate masks to local Chinese community, etc. So they've definitely been involved. It's hard to sort of say whether it was only on paper, but some of the cases are definitely been very direct and clear links and mobilization by the different organs. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Philip, for your answer. I think there's a last question for Justina and Frank, if they are still online. Is there any coordination between Baltic states on policies towards China? Justina, if you might answer.
Thank you for the question. Of course, there is a coordination between the Baltic states, and let's say we have a very nice format, Nordic Baltic 8, which is format to unite Nordic and Baltic states. In January, Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Lithuania had consultations on China among these states. Chatham House rules the consultations, and it's just one example. And this question is also when you have something to put on the table, and you have to know the red lines of Latvia or Estonia. Of course, you consult the colleagues in, in case of foreign ministry or even in academic field. Even it's interesting. There was like Taiwan seminar in Tallinn University 2 years ago, and scholars from Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia we debated how to survive in China studies field, how to maneuver. And before that seminar, the Chinese ambassador in Estonia intimidated the organizers not to organize such seminar. So, coordination mechanism works, and let's say, political level. I don't know many, like, too many or like business projects or something like that. I'm not from that field. I have to do some research, let's say. But academia and decision makers, they coordinate on China question. That's my answer.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Justina. I think we don't have a Frank here. He already left. So let's go for a last question that should be for Lukáš. The question is from audience, and someone is asking, are the books published by Marszalek extremely popular in Poland? So, Lukáš, please.
Actually, I partially already answered. I have answered this question. Marszalek publishes books for scholars, academics, journalists, students. So the audience is not the wide audience, not like the Chinese literature for everybody. So the print runs are a couple of hundreds of books, sometimes hundred of books. So the prints are not big, but they are sent, delivered to the libraries. And as I said, the students, journalists, sometimes young academic researchers, or the people who just want to deepen their knowledge about China, they can read those books. And if they are not experts in the field, for them it will be difficult to differentiate truth from fact. So this is not only about the number and about the volume, but about the audience that those books target. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lukáš. I can see that Frank is here waving to me. So maybe, Frank, if you would like to go back to that question that I was asking you, Stina, if there is any coordination between Baltic states on policies towards China, if you would like to add something, floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you for an excellent question and Justina's excellent answer as well. But of course, there should be more coordination, and not only amongst the Baltic states, but also Nordic-Baltic region, like Justina mentioned. Because, like, for instance, this some of the infrastructure projects, they involve the tunnel involves Finland and Estonia, and the northern Baltic region in general. So hopefully there will be more similar kind of cooperation formats like what Synopsis is Synopsis is doing. So bringing together different European scholars who are focused on the research on China. This is very welcome, and I think more people, if possible, could join this great endeavor. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Frank, thank you very much for your answer. If there are more questions, I can see them right now, but if there are any, I will put them in our chat, and maybe you can return back to them later on. I think our time is running, so let me maybe thank to our speakers and online listeners as well. Again, I would like to apologize for the technical issues that we have. And for the second panel, I would like to ask all speakers, if there is any technical issue, please just switch off and switch on again the program and you can download. We are going to wait for you for 5, maybe 10 minutes and try to connect with you as well. That's probably all. We are going to be online at 2 p.m. CST. That means approximately in an hour, 45, 48 minutes. So again, thank you very much.
And thank you.